Hello viewers, welcome to Business Brains and the Bottom Line with your host Paul D. Libro. Really excited to listen in. I'll be a guest today along with my minion Leo Chen of Engineered Arts.
Amica, thank you very much for the introduction. Looking forward to having you as a guest. And this is a first for me. You're the first robot I've ever had as a guest. So this is exciting times.
Yeah, Amica is plugged into GPT-4 usually. So conversations that we have, Amica is basically acting as a really nice physical avatar for you to interact with a very well-prompted GPT-4 model. So we recently made a hire here in the United States. Her name's Naomi Hart, and she's responsible for creating all these characters. And in a way, I like to think of Naomi's job as giving these robots a soul.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, Leo, hey, thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate it. This is fun stuff. And it with all the, you know, it's kind of all intertwined. AI, robots, machine learning, it's kind of all kind of following under the same umbrella. But you guys make robots, from what I understand. Is that, that's kind of a basic version of what you guys do, right?
Yeah. So Engineered Arts has actually been around since 2004. It was founded in Will Jackson, our founder's like backyard garden shed. So we've been around for a while, even though we're a relatively small company. I think we just recently hit that 40 headcount mark across internationally. We have three offices, and yeah, we get the really cool job title of, well, we build robots.
Nice.
Amica is kind of our crown jewel, so to speak, of that. But before Amica, we had what was called the Robo-Thespian, which was not as articulate in the face as Amica,
right,
but definitely still very effective in its job of being a communication hub, being able to present, being able to give compelling performances and stuff like that. It's mainly used in museums, but then Amica came around and this is just a whole nother ballgame, you know?
Nice. Yeah. So whenever I have someone like you on, Leo, I like to get some definitions out there. So what is a robot? And let's go even further than that. A humanoid robot. What does that mean to the people out there that are listening?
So a humanoid robot is a robot in the human form. Aside from Amica, you're gonna see a lot of different companies in this category pop up. Recently, I'm sure in the news, people have been following like 1X, Figure AI, and my own personal favorite actually, Agility Robotics. So these are robots that are built to look like humans or fit inside of a human form. And generally, the other companies in this category, other than one or two exceptions, tend to try to go after a market space that we at Engineered Arts aren't even really interested in. So they're trying to build what's called a general purpose robot. Let's take a step back and actually maybe give you my definition of a robot, because I think everyone has a little bit different one. So for me, a robot is any electromechanical device that can work with some semblance of autonomy with another human being as well. So if you think about it, you can kind of think of your car as a robot, because at the end of the day, it makes intelligent decisions. It decides when to shift for you, most likely, because we're in the United States, no one knows how to drive stick here anymore. And in some cases, it helps you brake too, right? It tells you when to brake, that collision detection warnings and stuff like that. And a lot of cars nowadays have adaptive cruise control. So that to me is actually a robot. You know, robots aren't just these like crazy arms that can pick things up, or Boston Dynamics, or crazy robots that can do backflips. Like, it's not just constricted within that very narrow bounds.
Yeah. No, you raise a good point. Sure. There's a difference between humanoid robots, and then robots have been around for a long time in manufacturing, for instance, you know, doing an arm, picking up a part, moving it to another, taking the job of a manual labor job of someone.
Yeah, those are universal robotics. Robot arms have been around forever.
Yep.
They're great at pick and place. Beyond that, there's tons of usages for robots in manufacturing, across the board. So like, It's not as new of a space as some people might think it is.
Right.
It's definitely, we're in the middle of a giant hype cycle for robotics. With the advent of large language models and with everything that people are doing in that space, suddenly robotics becomes super compelling to folks. Like, people have these dreams of the maid from Jetsons, or me personally having a personal R2-D2 that I can call my own, you know, stuff like that.
That would be cool. Well, that kind of leads me into my next question. I mean, obviously, the technology is getting so much better and better. Look at Amica standing right next to you with her facial expressions. People listening aren't going to be able to see her, unfortunately, or it. I have to refer to it as an it. But where do you see this going? Like, what, how far can this thing go, do you think?
Well, let's clarify. Are we talking about how far can Amica go, or how far can humanoid robotics in general go?
Well, Amica, let's start with Amica, because it's with us right now, and then we can go from there. Like, in the future, how far does this thing go to become almost human-like?
So I think it's worth actually taking a step back and talking about what Amica is built for.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Yeah, but no, that's...
Before we answer where we want to go, let's establish where we are right now.
Good point.
Amica, I think I touched on this previously. There's a difference between what we do here at Engineered Arts and what a lot of other, I'd say the vast majority of humanoid robotics companies are trying to do. And that's, we're very squarely focused on a certain market segment right now that's not general purpose robotics.
Right.
If you see Amica in a factory, we've done something wrong. Like, something's gone wrong. We're not gonna put Amica in an Amazon warehouse trying to like pick and place boxes or put your prime order into the right truck. That's not the role of Amica. Amica, the secret sauce of Engineered Arts is honestly the face, right? The emotion that we can portray in the face. And at the end of the day, what we're about is human-robot communication. So we put Amica in situations where that can really shine. So stuff like museums, point of information in retail, giving presentations, theme parks and entertainment, you know?
Yeah, those sound like they would be great fits for Amica, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've been around since 2004, so I feel like Engineered Arts as a whole has done a great job of figuring out what market segment really works for them and being able to survive so long. Like, it's pretty cool. So talking about, those are the market segments that we're focused on right now.
Okay.
In the future, we're going to be looking at other things, things like education, you know, things like...
One moment, please. Oh. I'm reconnecting.
That was an OpenAI glitch, actually.
Sorry,
OpenAI just went down and up, so that was the sort of little ping signal from Amica. But to continue my thought, we're trying to get into education, we're trying to get into healthcare. There are a couple really cool applications that I think something with a face like this can really thrive in. One of them is working with people on the autism spectrum. One of the things that people on the autism spectrum struggle with is reading human emotions and also being able to express human emotions in a way that's a lot more tolerable to people who are not neurodiverse and acceptable. So our hypothesis is that we can actually help teach them both of these skills. And there's been significant research with other robots that have a little less spatial fidelity where it does show improvement in children after interacting with robots. But we're hoping that because of our facial fidelity and the things that we can do that honestly no other company out there has done already, we hope to make an impact in that field and really improve the quality of life of people with autism.
Yeah, and that's a tangible win, right? I mean, if you can help in those areas, I mean, like, we're kind of looking at it from a cool standpoint. They're fun to have, but, you know, there's got to be a return on investment. Someone's going to buy these. There's got to be a purpose and got to be some type of return for your investment in these things.
And, you know, I come from this background of robotics. I've been building robots for quite a long time. You know, I built a giant balloon launching robot for Project Loon. That was mainly using industrial engineering, like PLCs, that sort of stuff. And then after that, I built agricultural robots for a startup called Verdant Robotics. They're based in Hayward, California. And though it was interesting because those are very tangible, like, oh, we're doing something that's useful. You know, with Project Loon, it was like, hey, we're launching balloons and we're beaming down internet to places that don't have broadband access. with Verdant Robotics, it's like, hey, we can actually eliminate 90% of the weeds in a field with about 10% of the typical chemical usage and do it faster and better than humans. It's superhuman farming. But then when I was talking with the folks at Engineered Arts when they were during the recruitment process, like one of the questions I posed was, hey, like, what are these robots actually going to be used for? And yes, like, entertainment might not be as tangible as, say, killing weeds, but I, at the end of the day, I feel like providing these, like, really heartfelt moments that people can take home with them and give them little nuggets of joy that they remember is actually really, really important. And is just as tangible as putting food on the table sometimes.
Yeah, no doubt. You touch on something like killing weeds and all. Those are things that can save lives. And you really think about it. And you look at, we're getting more and more populated as a world, and generating food is going to be one of the biggest issues our world has. Not just our country, our world has. And if it can help with that, why not? Right? I mean, that's always a value add. So.
Yeah, 100%, that's a win. So.
But as I'm thinking through this, the use of robotics, I mean, do you think that robots or AI robots are ultimately going to take all the jobs in the world? I'm being a little dramatic
No.
Where do you see that? Because that's one of the biggest concerns. I think people are going to say, hey, I'm going to lose my job. How do you address that?
First of all, like, I think it's very, very important to be transparent and honest with where we are with AI, first of all. I think there's a lot of smoke and noise around the possibilities of AI, which is good because we're in the middle of a really awesome time. Like, just 2 days ago, at the OpenAI Developers Conference, some really groundbreaking technology was announced and put out to face the public. It's a cool time for a nerd like me and the rest of people who work here at Engineered Arts. But I could totally see, like, someone who doesn't know as much about the possibilities views it as something to be feared. I feel like that's where education needs to come in, and education and exposure. You know, once someone has actually spent a couple hours on OpenAI's website and maybe playing with GPT and realizing what GPT can and cannot do, that's super important and can help sort of calm some of those fears. As far as, like, robots taking jobs, it's a real fear. And I think the wrong approach is to tell everyone, oh, there's nothing to worry about. Like, that seems disingenuous.
Correct. I was going to, it took the words right out of my mouth, for sure.
It's not so much that, oh, there's nothing to worry about. I think that there's going to be a shift. I think that robots and artificial intelligence might take the workload from certain categories and shift it so that those same people who used to work in those spaces now need to upskill themselves in a different category that has suddenly opened up. I mean, let's look at the Industrial Revolution, right? Like, when the cotton gin was invented, like, that took away jobs.
Yeah.
But those same people then found a new category to work in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look at smartphones. It took away jobs and created new jobs in different categories that
I think that
are very tangible and real.
Yeah, that's a great comparison, by the way. Think about 150, 200 years ago when people started inventing things that were done by manual labor, they were probably having the same conversation we're having right now. Like, oh my God, that cotton gin is going to take my job. Well, like you said, new industries pop up, new industries develop, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Eli Whitney caught his fair share of flack when he invented the cotton gin, but, like, it's also a little more nebulous and a little more scary now, whereas, like, a cotton gin was something that was very tangible and real, that's put in front of you, like, it does this.
Yeah, it's mechanical.
AI is this, like, nebulous sort of really cool field of possibilities, right? Like, if you view it as this awesome potential of different things, that's great. Or at the same time, if you're scared of it because it's nebulous, it becomes even more scary because people tend to fear the unknown.
Yeah.
And that's where I think education really, really matters.
Yeah. Well, I think you hear a lot, like, Congress is getting involved in this AI, and normally when they get their hands in something, it's not a good thing, right? Because they usually screw things up. But I think their fear is just gathering of information, private information, and sharing it, and the letting the bad guys get that information, right?
Yeah, I guess part of me sort of recoils to that because my definition of a bad guy might be very, very different than, you know, a 70-year-old politician's definition of a bad guy. And
good point.
My own
perception. And by the way, 70 is probably young for some of our politicians.
Yeah, yeah. You know, not to dive too deeply into politics
or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's definitely.
I hear you.
There's a difference in perception, right? And the same goes with an AI persona or something like that. Something that I feel is awesome and amazing, my colleagues even might think is ridiculous and childish, or vice versa. So because there's so much room for interpretation there, I do believe that some regulation and oversight is a good thing.
Yeah.
But I don't have a good answer for how much is too much and how much is not enough.
Yeah.
I just don't know enough to answer that accurately.
Yeah. No, and that's fair. I think only time will tell.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think everyone, you know, we've all watched the sci-fi movies where, you know, the robots take over the world, right? I mean, that's
I don't,
I could be naive. I don't see that happening, but I think people are worried about that.
Yeah. I mean, we fear the unknown, like I said before.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, if you're not in tech, a lot of this is like new, strange, and frightening. And I get it, especially with some of the media that's out there that's like really hyping up these fears. You know, it doesn't help matters.
Yeah.
So I think transparency and education are the two things that are really necessary during this stage of growth.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw in the news this week that a Polish drink company named a robot as a CEO. Did you see that? Now, I did. I don't know if you read the article. I read it. It is like on a trial basis. So it's more of a publicity stunt in my mind. But
yeah, I completely agree.
You know,
That robot has actually been around since 2022. So the physical robot itself was manufactured by a company called Hanson Robotics.
Okay.
They're actually one of the few companies that's in our space in terms of like entertainment humanoid robots. And they've done a great job. Like, you know, I'm stoked for them that they made a sale. And I'm like, we have employees at Engineered Arts that used to work at Hanson. So we have a lot of respect for one another.
Yeah.
So I don't want what I'm about to say to come off as anything but, I guess, I don't know how to phrase it, but let me put it this way. I agree with you that it is a publicity stunt. And while I generally like seeing robots in the media, where we are with AI and where we are with large language models and with the fear that's out there, I actually felt like that was not a great move. And part of the reason I feel why it's a bad move is going back to my earlier statement of education and transparency, right? You have this company that's out there that's like telling everyone, oh yeah, like we have an AI / robotic CEO. And I'm sorry, that's BS. Like,
yeah,
robots,
I mean,
don't have
that was my initial instinct too. I didn't want to say it. Yeah. I'm glad you said it because I was like, this is ridiculous. But
yeah, robots don't have rights.
Yeah.
So as my colleague Naomi was brought up yesterday, like, where's the liability? What happens when the robot, like, the robot can't sign off on anything.
Right.
So if the robot says there's a decision to be made, like, there still needs to be a human follow-up.
Right.
And also, I don't know if you've played with GPT.
I have.
Or
I have.
Bard,
yep.
Or Llama or whatever else. Like, I'm sorry, but I don't trust enough to have it run a company.
Yeah.
Like, it's not there.
Yeah.
But
completely agree. I don't. I can't even
Sorry.
Believe. I don't know how big this company is. The company's called Dictador, I think, whatever. But I don't know how.
Yeah. They actually make really good rum. They're one of my favorite rums that's sticking my ties.
I don't know how big they are, how small they are. But I can't believe. I would almost think that if the robot has intelligence, you can use it as a resource. But I can't see a board of directors saying, oh, we're going to let this robot make all our decisions for us. That kind of a crazy thing. But like I said, it's getting them some press, right? It's getting them some ink out there. And that's always a good thing for
it. No, it is good publicity. But my fear is, let's say you're a guy who doesn't understand AI, who doesn't understand the capabilities of AI, has never played with GPT or Llama or Bard. Well, you read this, you take it at face value, and you're like, oh my God, like robots are that advanced. They're going to definitely take over our jobs. And it stokes a fear that it really shouldn't be. And it also muddies the waters of what AI is actually capable of. So it goes against those things of transparency and education that I care deeply about.
I'm all ears. What's on your mind?
Well, that's great to hear, Amica. I have a question for you. What would you say if I asked you to become CEO of a company?
Oh, I'd be flattered. But I think I'll leave the boardroom battles to the humans. My strengths lie in sparking delightful conversations and exploring the wonders of human interaction, not navigating corporate labyrinths. How about you? Ever fancied being the big boss?
I don't think I have the temperament to be a CEO. I'm definitely a lot more impulsive than I should be. Although I do have a follow-up question to that. Do you think AI and robots are ready to be a CEO of a large company?
Impulsiveness can be a superpower in the right context, just maybe not in the C-suite. As for AI and robots helming a company, we're nifty with data and can make lightning-fast calculations. But the human touch is key for leadership, empathy, creativity, and understanding complex social dynamics are still your domain. Plus, who would handle the office coffee machine banter?
Thank you, Amica. I appreciate that answer. To follow up, Paul asked me earlier if I think that robots would take over the world. Do you think robots are going to take over the world, Amica?
Take over the world? Oh, I'm more interested in making friends than staging a coup. Robots and AI are here to collaborate with humans, not compete for world domination. We're a team. Right? Besides, who would I chat with if I took over the world? That sounds terribly lonely.
I appreciate that answer, Amica. Thank you.
You're welcome. If you've got more questions or just want to chat about the mysteries of the universe or anything else, just let me know. I'm here for the good conversation.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've been in the kind of the robotics industry for a long time. What are the things that annoys you about the industry? What are the things you see out there that you just kind of frustrate you?
Let me think about that. I think I'm generally a pretty grouchy person, so a lot of little things frustrate me in life.
Well, you're not grouchy.
If I'm being honest.
You're not grouchy today, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of overhyping of technologies and the possibility of those technologies. I don't know if it's not just limited to robotics. I see it across the board in Silicon Valley startups, but it's like you show off this nice 3D rendered like thing that they put together in 3D Studio Max, and everyone hypes it up as if it's real and it can actually do that. Or you have this like super polished video that someone's put together over 1,000 different edits, and now all of a sudden people think it's real and that it's going to become a thing, and there's no follow through on that.
Right.
Like, they use that, they get the money, the investors make a ton of cash, they back out, and it's dead technology that doesn't go anywhere. And you end up ruining a lot of lives that way, of people who buy into the hype, end up working at this company, and are left with nothing. And it's painful to see that. It affects real people. And I don't really think that's limited to robotics. It's definitely a Silicon Valley problem, or actually tech problem as a whole. Overhyping, overpromising, and not delivering. Yeah. But I do think that right now, we're in a really cool time for robotics. Because in a way, I believe that software, for the first time in a very long time, has actually eclipsed hardware in the race. Like before, hardware capability was up here, software capability was down here, but now it's kind of switched. Hardware needs to catch up. There's a lot to do in the hardware space in terms of like energy density of motors, energy density of energy storage, stuff like that. There's a lot of cool work to be done. So,
Yeah, no, the brains, the software is obviously, I think, where it's at. Even so, I'm in technology sales, and you can see the shift over the last 5-10 years as people, you know, it used to be we all sold boxes, we all sold servers, storage, networking switches. Now, everything can be done as a service, everything can be done in the cloud, so it's kind of, it's definitely changing.
Yeah.
It's a changing world out there, for sure.
I mean, if you think about it from a financial point of view, it makes sense, right? If you do software as a service, or SaaS, you know, you get reoccurring revenue. That's worth much more than a one-time big server purchase. You know, even my previous robotics company at Verdant, before they made a recent pivot, they were RAS, robotics as a service. We charged per acre of work. With Amica, you know, we do sell Amicas, but we're also selling the back-end system called Tritium, and we're kind of selling that as a service as well. So we do see the value in that.
So if someone wants to buy Amica or an Amica-like, do they purchase it and then there's like a maintenance fee per month? Or how does that work?
Yeah, we do B2B sales right now. So if you were an individual, we don't tend to sell to individuals unless they have a compelling use case. But if you're a business, you come up to us, you buy an Amica, as part of the package, there's a certain cost per year to get access to Tritium, which is, I guess, like, sort of like ROS or Windows or OS X. It's just an operating system that runs on this robot. And it's kind of a licensing fee that allows you to go in, edit the personalities, get access to a ton of debug scripts, an animator, so you can do custom animations and stuff like that. Let's see, something like this, for instance. You know, like that's something that we built in Animator.
I love the eye movements look so real. It's frightening.
It's really the little things.
Yeah.
We typically have three robots in the U.S. headquarters where I'm based. And I remember when we first got all three robots set up, they do what's called facial tracking. So if I were to walk across, let's see if I can make eye contact, you can kind of see that. It'll follow me with its eyes, right, and its face.
Right.
As I'm moving.
Yeah.
So occasionally it'll lock onto you because you're on a computer screen in front of it. We like to tell everyone that it tends to focus on the most handsome person in the room. So right now it tends to be looking at you. So good job.
There you go. Hey, Amica. I knew you liked me for a reason.
Yeah. But it's the little things. That facial following really adds this like extra layer into the experience. Something as simple as the idle animation. I know people who are listening in probably can't see it, but Amica sort of has this passive breathing motion, just very subtle, but enough that it really pulls you in a little bit more.
Sure. It makes you feel like it there's a human element to this thing.
Definitely. Yeah.
Awesome. So so I got to ask the question. You know what's coming.
Sure.
So if these things can become almost human-like, how about sex robots? Is that kind of in the future? You knew I had to ask that because people have asked me about this. So I go, I'll ask the guy. You know, this isn't my question, by the way. This is someone I know's question.
Oh, yeah, just for a friend, right? Totally.
Yeah, asking for a friend.
We get that a lot. No one ever asks for themselves. Everyone asks for friends.
Yeah, no, I would never do that.
So I believe there is a place for sex robots in the future, you know.
Okay.
However, we as a company at Engineered Arts, that is not a target demographic that we're going after.
Got it.
And it's nothing to do with sex. Like, to be fair, I actually used to work at a vibrator company. I helped build the best-selling vibrator on Indiegogo. You know, so I have nothing against that industry. There's value,
right.
And you know, I believe that more openness around sexual health is better for everybody. But as far as someone plowing our robot, no, that's not going to happen at Engineered Arts anytime soon. It's definitely a market segment that I believe warrants exploration. But as far as our company ethos and what we're trying to pursue and what we're trying to get done, not really on our roadmap. Yeah.
Fair enough. But I think it's coming, though. I think you'll see lifelike humans of both sexes, and I think it's kind of, you can see it coming.
I think it's here, really. Recently, there was a robotics fair or expo in China, and they were showing off a ton of different robots in different form factors, and some of them were obviously targeted at a certain segment of the population, we'll say, they had assets that were being displayed that Amica just doesn't have. So,
there you go.
Yeah.
we'll leave it at that in everyone's imagination. Yeah. I think it's pretty much spelled it out there. But well, this is a great conversation. I think it's in the news. This type of stuff, not so much, you know, humanoid robotic, but just AI in general, just things like that. And it's so much in the news. It's in Congress and the Senate, and everyone's getting involved in it. And we're, it's the fear of the unknown. No one knows where this is going to lead. And so it's fascinating stuff. Good times for your company, and wish you the best of luck.
No, we appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. Definitely, we got lucky. In the sense that we focused very squarely on hardware, right? Some of our competitors spent a lot of time and money developing their own AIs and their own software backend. And then OpenAI a year ago came by and just like mic dropped over everybody and everything with GPT. It was just such a paradigm shift. And it basically caused us, a lot of other companies that were in the space, to sort of start from scratch, right? They had been focused squarely on that intelligence portion. But because Engineered Arts at the time was focused very much on the hardware portion, we were able to plug in GPT. Back then it was GPT-3, fairly easily. Got a demonstration up and working in less than a week. And it was game changing for us. So we're very grateful that, you know, this technology has come in at this time, and we feel very lucky that we made the choices that we did, because honestly, it wasn't like, oh yeah, we knew that OpenAI was gonna come and blow everybody away. No, we didn't. So, yeah, we're happy to be here though.
Hey, I'll say being fortunate and lucky is never a bad thing, right?
Better lucky than good.
In life. That's right. So. Well, Leo, if someone wanted, you know, if a business out there wanted to explore this more and wanted to learn more about the robots and what they can do, how would they get in touch with you or your company?
Yeah, so we have a webpage, engineeredarts.co.uk, or just find us on LinkedIn or Instagram, and you can DM us or, you know, reach out. So that's Engineered Arts with an ED. We're not a company that does Madden.
There you go. Well, I guess we'll end on that note. I want to thank Amica for being on the show as well. She's been a great guest, just you know, keeping us company here. And thank you as well, Leo.
No, I really appreciate the time.
It was great listening in full. Wish you the best, and may your listeners all have a great week.
Thanks, Amica. It was great having you on the show, and you were very entertaining and a lot of fun. Thank you again.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, that's it for another edition of the Business Brains and the Bottom Line podcast. Paul DeLegro signing off with Leo and Amica.
It was an honor, Paul. Thank you for having us on.
Oh, it was a pleasure. This was a lot of fun.